Hello, and welcome to Book Reviews Kill, a podcast about fantasy, sci-fi, and horror novels. I'm Evan.
And I'm Chad.
And you're joining us today for our recap and discussion of Queen of Shadows, book 4 in the Throne of Glass series by Sarah J. Maas. Okay. I liked this one more than Assassin's Blade, and I liked it more than Throne of Glass, and I liked it more than Crown of Midnight, but it didn't quite hit for me like Air of Fire did. There were some pretty exciting scenes. I don't know. I was excited to see Rowan come back. I thought the ending was excellent, really good ending. A bunch of things happened that I wasn't expecting at all. Some really solid revelations. It was a solid book.
It was the second best in the series so far. The last one definitely takes the cake. I think that one was my favorite. But this one was a solid second place. Like, by no means a bad book, and certainly better than the other ones that we had read, I think. Sometimes the complexity that's built into the story feels a little bit forced for me. Like, everybody has, like, a past with each other that, like, is never mentioned to me. And, like, I've been a part of a lot of that past,
yeah.
And they weren't, it was never mentioned to me.
Sure.
So I don't
think of exactly one character,
yeah,
like right away that you're thinking of. Yeah,
I know that I've complained of this in the past, where I feel like Sarah sometimes doesn't know the full scope that a character will have in her story when she starts writing them. So sometimes they kind of get like injected in later, like, oh my gosh, we're cousins, and like, so I don't know, but I that complaint continues on into this story of sometimes I feel like she's like, you know what would be awesome is if this, and it is awesome, but it feels like weird that it hasn't been like hinted at to me before the present, you know? So that would be my one critique, is sometimes I feel like she just kind of jams a story together based off of what she thinks is cool. And you know, she's not wrong. It does make the story really cool. It just seems like the foresight should have been hinted at a little bit. But I love everything that's happening with Manon. I love all of that. That's real great. Abraxos, super cool. And man, can I just say, I nailed a few of my predictions.
Did. Yeah, we should talk about that actually after the recap. I mean, kind of going back to what you were saying before, though, about things feeling like they're a little bit tossed in. I think that if the end result is entertaining and it fits, I don't typically mind that very much. I think that also, not to get too soapboxy, but I do feel like we, the way that we're used to stories being told to us, we want a lot of narrative symmetry, and we want things to be foreshadows, and we want things to be subtly hinted at, and we feel like sometimes it's not earned if it wasn't before. But I mean, like, I think there's some validity to that in a certain sense, but at the same time, like I said a little bit ago, if it works and it's interesting, I don't typically really mind it, because it's a weird standard to hold somebody to like have 8 books figured out in the first volume that they write. You know what I mean? It's a lot to expect from somebody. So my general rule is like, that felt a little bit, you know, jammed in there, but also I kind of like what that means for the story now. And if it means something that I can really engage with that kind of changes things in an interesting way, then I'm like super fine with it, you know. What I don't like is using those kinds of contrivances to explain away things. You know what I mean? Like, I don't mind characters and relationships and stuff, but it's like, oh, this magic bean that if you plant it, then all the bad people die. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like
totally.
And I don't like that kind of stuff at all. But if the magic bean had been, you know, mentioned in the first book, then I'm like, I guess, I see what you do.
Right.
Yeah, okay. So that's my whole spiel on it. Yeah.
I agree with you. You know, because like, there's none of the like really like ahas that they're like, these two things, these were, had history, and I felt like I should have known it. Would it have been nice to have gotten a little mention? Yeah, sure. But it did aid the story and actually increase the importance of some of the characters. So like, I don't dislike the fact that she does it. It just, again, seems sometimes just jammed in there of her just being like, man, this would be cool if, and then she makes it so, and that's fine. And honestly, like you said, aided the story, so I'm not really complaining that much. Just like,
no, I think it's valid what you're saying. No, we're gonna talk about it actually after the recap. I mean, to Maas's credit, I feel like she actually does have some stuff like the Volg, and just some like a lot of the stuff regarding the word marks and the word keys and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like a lot of that's pretty fleshed out in the first couple of books, and it's really starting. So there's like a really healthy balance of it, I feel like. I think what you're talking about, or at least what I feel like you're talking about, is specifically characters almost.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Almost always,
so,
yeah.
Well, let's just get into the recap and we can start talking about specific characters, specific instances, and things like that.
Totally. Let's do it.
Our story begins with Aelin, who was called Selena, as she returns to Rifthold and finds Arabin Hamel in a tavern. He tells her Adion Ashriver is imprisoned for treason and will be executed in 3 days. He will help her rescue Adion if she will bring him one of the Valg demons. He also tells her where to find Kael Westfall. Aelin finds Nesrin Falik, who takes her to Kael. They recount what has happened while they were separated. They are sad about what the other has endured, but are vocal about mistakes the other has made. Kael knows how to restore magic, but he won't share the secret with Aelin, not ready to trust her yet. This infuriates her. Kael returns the Eye of Alenna necklace, and Aelin returns the amethyst ring. Arabin sends Aelin's old assassin uniform to her. He also sends Lysandra, a former nemesis. She has a letter that Wesley wrote her before his death explaining what happened leading up to Sam Cortland's death. Kael and Nesrin go to the Shadow Market for a covert meeting with some guards from the castle. They learn how the king's soldiers will be set up during the execution banquet. Aelin shows up and almost blows their cover. She asks the guards a few favors to help her during Adion's rescue. Kael asks Aelin to make sure Dorian Haveliard is unharmed during her castle raid. They argue about it, and Aelin lets Kael know that she has heard about his history with Nesrin from Arabin. Kael shares the secret of how to restore magic. Meanwhile, Dorian has been living in darkness. Most of his memories are gone, and he doesn't even know his own name most of the time. He knows something is living inside him, trying to overtake his mind. He knows he can't fight it much longer. In the castle dungeons, Adion is hiding his pain from the injury he incurred during his capture. He hopes to succumb to the fever and infection before his execution. He knows it's to draw Aelin to the castle. Dorian notices how sick Adion is and orders his wounds cleaned and the infection treated. Adion begins feeling better and is made presentable for his execution day. Aelin enters the castle with Madame Florine's troop of dancers. The dancers enter the banquet hall, tossing fistfuls of black colored powder as they dance. In the finale, the dancers throw glass flowers on the ground. A substance in the glass ignites the black powder on the floor, and the banquet hall explodes in flame. Everyone flees. Aelin frees Adion, and they fight their way out of the hall. They run through the gardens toward the wall. Dorian approaches. The demon inside him tries to kill Aelin, but she has protective word marks on her skin. She asks Dorian to give her one sign he's in there, but he doesn't. She goes to kill him with her sword, but Nesrin shoots an arrow at the sword to deflect the swing. She has been spying on Aelin on a tip from Arabin. Aelin and Adion flee. At the pickup point, they hop in a carriage with Lysandra. They then switch to a carriage with Kael and make their way back to Aelin's apartment. Kael reveals he knows she almost killed Dorian. They argue, and Kael says she's not his queen, so Lysandra discovers who Aelin is. Adion wakes up in Aelin's apartment. The cousins rehash everything they have been through in the 10 years they have been separated. Aelin is surprised he's not ashamed of some of the things she has done, but he's committed horrors as well. Arabin has signed Aelin up to fight. She chooses a Valg demon commander as her opponent. Kael is amazed at her new skills. She kills the demon fairly easily. Arabin is mad she went for the kill instead of delivering the demon to him. Adion is slowly recovering and he thinks Aelin is babying him. They discuss Rowan Whitethorn, and Aelin discovers that Adion views him as a hero, having heard stories about him throughout his childhood. Adion suspects Rowan might want to be part of her court, and hopes he doesn't steal his blood oath. Kael discovers the Valg soldiers sealed and burned the Shadow Market because those who rescued Adion got their supplies there. Kael greets Adion and asks what he learned about Dorian while in the castle. Adion urges Kael to trust the decisions they will make. He says he can't. Aelin follows a Valg soldiers into the sewer and watches him talk to a creature that emerges from the water. It looks like one of the creatures carved in the clock tower by the palace, and it has the voice of the king. Aelin agrees to take Adion to a bar to get some fresh air. On their way home, they find Rowan. Aelin is overwhelmed with joy. The men size each other up and act territorial. Aelin drags Rowan into her room under the guise he needs a bath. They catch up while he bathes. When they rejoin Adion, Rowan asks who his father was. Adion doesn't know. Rowan can tell from his scent that it is Gavriel, another legendary warrior. Rowan mentions he is bloodsworn to Aelin, and this infuriates Adion. He storms out. Rowan reveals he came back to Aelin because Lorcan Salvatare is nearby. Maeve probably sent him to find the word key. Aelin wants Rowan to sleep in her bed, just like in Wendlin. Aelin gets up the next morning to make breakfast and Adion returns. They make up. She tells him he can swear the blood oath too if he wants to. Kale arrives to go over maps and strategies with Aelin, and he sees Rowan for the first time. He seems slightly jealous. Aelin sneaks out of her apartment at night. Lorcan is following her. She lures him into a nest of Valg demons and leaves him for dead. But he escapes and catches up with her. They threaten each other. Rowan shows up. Lorcan says Maeve let them walk away and still has plans for their defeat. Lysandra arrives and Rowan identifies her as a shapeshifter. Aelin and Adion are shocked. Lysandra says no one knows. She reveals she's been stuck in this body since magic fell. She says Aerobin will call in his favor tomorrow. Aelin and Rowan catch a Valg demon to take with them. Aelin, Rowan, and Adion head to the Assassin's Keep. Aerobin answers the door. All four take the demon down to the dungeon. Aerobin only allows Aelin in the torture room. His plan is to find out how the king controls him. The demon reveals that the king slips the black stone rings on their finger, slices their skin, licks their blood, and then they are bound to him. Aerobin slices off the demon's finger to obtain the ring and kills the demon. They join the rest of the group for dinner. The conversation is tense, and Aerobin witnesses the silent communication and close bond between Aelin and Rowan. Aerobin reveals he knows Aelin has been quietly wrecking his investments all over town. Aelin says she will only stop once he gives her the Amulet of Orinth, her family heirloom, and the third word key. Aerobin obliges. He then acts like he's going to kiss her, but slips the demon's ring on her finger, slits her palm, and licks her blood. He thinks he now controls her. Aelin plays along until they are away from Aerobin's men. The ring was a fake she planted on the demon after she removed the real one. Aelin and Rowan hide the real amulet under a loose board on her floor. Aelin goes to the roof to wait out what she knows Lysandra is up to tonight, killing Aerobin. Despite everything, Aelin has mixed feelings about it all. Rowan joins her. Aelin touches his face and wants to get more intimate, but he tells her not to touch him that way and leaves abruptly. Lysandra lies next to Aerobin in his bed, and he is fast asleep, because he trusts her completely. He never stirs as she reaches for the knife under his pillow, and slowly drags its keen edge across his throat, his blood wetting the mattress beneath. Aelin, Rowan, and Adion head to the keep after word about Aerobin arrives. It is awkward between Aelin and Rowan. Aerobin's top three men are trying to sort out what happened. Aelin asks to see the room, and it is a bloody mess. The banker arrives to read the will. Aerobin left everything to Aelin. The three men ask her to leave them to buy the house from her. She gives them 3 hours to raise the funds. Aelin, Rowan, and Adion view Aerobin's body. Aelin admits she switched the will. She then decapitates Aerobin with her sword, just to be sure. Aelin is still being fairly cold to Rowan. He continues to fight his growing feelings towards her. Aelin, Kale, Adion, and Rowan follow a tip to the catacombs under the Shadow Market looking for Hellfire. They find a temple made of the bones and confessions of sinners. They discover there is an ultimate Valg demon named Arwen. They believe the king hid him in the mountains of Morath. They also find the Hellfire and rehide it until it is needed to destroy the clock tower. Nezrin joins them and shares news about Moranth. The king is building an army there with dark soldiers, witches, and wyverns. Lorcan appears out of the shadows and puts a knife to Aelin's throat. He wants to know where the third word key is. He says Bran and Galthinius' ring isn't just sentimental to Maeve. It can grant immunity from the power of the Valg. Lorcan wants to exchange their word key for the ring. Rowan admits how terrified he was when he thought Lorcan would hurt her. He and Aelin want to be intimate, but he says they should wait until they're totally alone. Evangeline, the girl Lysandra is caring for, arrives at the apartment. She says the king kidnapped Lysandra because Aerobin's will spoke of her shapeshifter bloodline. Kale and Nesrin bring additional news. The king is traveling to the Oakwald Forest to meet with the leader of his wyvern cavalry. Manon, the witches, and their wyverns have been stationed at... Manon, the witches, and their wyverns have been stationed at Morath for weeks now, awaiting orders from the king via Duke Parrington. Caltaine Rampierre is there with him, and seems to be a puppet. The witches are getting restless. The Duke wants Manon to choose a clan to be implanted with Valg stones to see if they can breed with each other. Manon doesn't like this, but knows her grandmother is expecting her to obey. Astarin questions Manon's choices, and is demoted for it. A crippled human servant named Alid Lachen is in Manon's room. She can tell the girl is hiding something. Manon scratches Alid and tastes her blood as she's leaving the room, and can tell she has some witch's blood in her. A clan of yellow legs is chosen for implantation. Manon asks Alid to choose whether she wants to ally with the witches. Alid chooses to be a witch. She witnesses Coltane being ordered to use her shadow fire on a soldier to torture him. Manon questions what else is going on in the mountain caves. Duke reveals that her grandmother is making weapons for him. Manon orders Alid to find out what is happening to the yellow-leg witches in exchange for her protection. Alid takes Laundrie down to the dungeons to sneak a peek. They have given birth once and are pregnant again. They are chained to tables and begging to be set free. Manon does not agree to free them as Astarin wants, and Astarin is demoted yet again. Alid shares that she knew Aelin as a child and hopes that she is still alive. Alid is slowly stealing supplies from the kitchen to escape and disappear forever. Duke Parrington and Vernon Loken tell Manon they want more witches to be implanted, this time from the Blackbeak clan. They see Coltane's Shadowfire magic in action again, but Caltaine is retaking her body from the Valg demon inside. Aelin's group heads towards Oakwald Forest. The witches are already there waiting for the king. They see the size of the wyverns. They see Manon's grandma arrive, and she warns Manon not to speak unless spoken to when the king arrives. The king's group noisily approaches. Lysandra is in a prison wagon. Dorian's eyes go straight to Manon and hold there. She thinks he would be beautiful if it wasn't for the black collar around his neck and the coldness in his face. Manon thinks the king looks like pure cruelty. She doesn't want to bow to a man like this. She is mouthy to him, but he likes her superior attitude. He asks her grandma to see the weapon, and they make Manon stay behind. The demon thrashes inside Dorian as Manon approaches. He regains a bit of control over her body in her presence. When Manon asks his name, for the first time in a long while, he seems able to answer. The demon returns in full when his father returns, however, but his memories of Manon linger. Aelin rescues Lysandra from the prison wagon. Kale whisks her away into the woods. Aelin and Adian witness Manon's grandmother slap her. Manon pleads her case about what's going on at Morath, but her grandmother will hear none of it. Kale secretly goes to kill Dorian, but the 13 are there to greet him. Rowan tracks Kale by scent. Manon is surprised to see Rowan. She hasn't seen a Fey Yin in a long time and knows he would be a lethal opponent. She turns Kale over and doesn't wish to take any prisoners. Aelin says that makes her smarter than Baba Yellowlegs. The witches run toward her, only to be trapped by an invisible wall Aelin constructed using Kale's blood in the grass and word magic. Aelin and her court flee. The witches track them down to a temple in the middle of a ravine, with a series of decrepit bridges connecting it to the land. Rowan gets shot in the shoulder with an arrow. Aelin and Manon fight an epic battle on the island. Astarin and Adian want to join them, but they won't let them. The island begins to collapse beneath them as they fight. As Manon is about to fall into the ravine, Aelin turns back to save her. She carries her over the bridge to safety. Manon now owes her a life debt. Rowan is not in good shape. They take him to the only healer that they might possibly trust, a midwife at Nesrin's father's farm. Kale apologizes to Aelin for causing this mess when he went after Dorian. Manon tells the king there was an attack, but says that they killed them all. She asks the king if he will use Shadowfire with the weapons. They are giant transportable battle towers lined inside with ancient mirrors. The mirrors can amplify any power the king chooses to use. Alid's Uncle Vernon captures her while the witches are still gone. He has figured out that she has Blackbeak blood and locks her in a dungeon cell. Duke summons Manon when she returns to Morath. She reads reports from around the kingdom and realizes Aelin is friends with Dorian and must have been there to rescue him. Since Duke provided her with information, he requests another group of witches for implantation. Aelin asks for a private meeting with Manon and tells her a secret from years ago. She fell in love with the immortal man and got pregnant. She carried the baby full term, which is rare for witches, but the baby girl was stillborn. Manon's grandmother was furious. Asterin was heartbroken, but she healed and came back stronger than ever. She begs Manon to disobey her grandmother and not let the witches be impregnated. Manon feels a thread tugging at her. She and Asterin take off for Rifthold before heading back to Morath. Lysandra thanks Aelin for rescuing her. She's surprised they did so. She gets another surprise when Aelin presents her with paperwork from her boss saying she and Evangeline are free from all debts. Rowan is slowly recovering. One night he smells Lorcan on the roof. He goes up all alone to speak to him. Lorcan offers the ring he stole from Maeve in exchange for the Amulet of Orinth. Rowan makes the exchange. Aelin is anxiously awaiting Rowan's return inside. Their plan worked, and Lorcan didn't realize the amulet was a fake. There is only one tiny wall left in Dorian's mind before his total takeover by the demon. All he can remember is one word, Manon. Kael and Aelin finally settle some things between them. He has dreaded this conversation, but it goes well, and he feels at peace. Aelin tells him Nesrin is interested in him. Later that night, Kael and Nesrin discuss final battle plans. Neslin leads him into a city temple. She tells him about the southern continent, where her father is from, and how the best healers in the world reside in a city there. They hope after all this is over, they can figure out where to live together. Aelin and Rowan share one kiss the night before they go into battle. The next morning, Aelin sees a message written on a banner from Manon meant for her. It says that the human is still inside Dorian. Rowan and Adian carry an urn of hellfire in the sewers below the city and the catacombs below the castle. They realize Lorcan has lied about killing all the wordhounds. Some of them are waiting there to attack. Aelin leads Kael through the city as prisoner. When they get to the castle, the king's guards, who have been Kael's spies, are skewered on the castle fence. Guards escort the two of them through the castle, but no one searched them for weapons. They make it to the king, who is seated on his glass throne with Dorian beside him. Dorian recognizes their faces, but the demon snaps those thoughts away. Aelin brings the king's supposed seal rings of the king and the crown prince of Wendland. She says Kael was waiting for her, and she captured him when she realized he was no longer loyal to the king. The king reveals he knows who she really is. He makes his guards leave and says to stop pretending Kael is a captive. Aelin asks where the word keys are. She tries to keep him talking to buy Rowan and Adion more time to blow up the clock tower. The king says he knows she has the third word key. He gives Dorian magic lashings. Kael tries to help him, but the black magic prevents him. Kael asks the king to hand over Dorian. Rowan and Adion fight the wordhounds. They know they're behind schedule as the clock tower strikes noon. Aelin reveals her Eye of Elena necklace. The king wants it. She says to let Dorian go, or she'll destroy it, and then Erwin will stay locked up forever. Aelin takes off running. Dorian chases Aelin through the castle. She climbs higher and hopes the tower is destroyed soon to fight his ice with her fire. She jumps to a glass-covered bridge high between the castle towers. Kael tries to kill the king to release Dorian from his bond. The king fights with black magic, and the word marks drawn on Kael are failing. It appears that the king destroys him with one final blast. Aelin and Dorian continue to fight on the icy castle bridge suspended high in the sky. She tries to jog his memory, but only the demon is there. He stabs her in the side. Rowan and Adion have killed 4 wordhounds, but 3 remain. Neither can get to the fuse to blow up the clock tower. Lorcan shows up then to help them. They beat the remaining 3. Adion blows the explosives and destroys the tower. It traps the 3 men in the tunnel between debris and the Valg soldiers, who have just arrived. Manon and Asterin feel the return of magic as they are flying back to Morath. It is in chaos because of the effects of magic. Manon looks for Aelid and rescues her from the dungeons. She knows there will be consequences for defying Vernon. Calthane helps them escape. She blows up the mountain of Morath and sacrifices herself in the process. The Duke unfortunately survived the blast and has new battle plans for the witches. Manon tells Aelid on her own to head north. Aelin slipped Athril's ring on Dorian's finger as he stabbed her, enabling him to fight the demon. The demon uses Dorian's power to send ice daggers at Aelin, but her power has returned. She counters with fire. They continue to fight. Aelin's wound has healed. Dorian finally sees through his own eyes and sees Aelin. Rowan, Adian, and Lorcan are trying to fight their way past the Valg. They think it's hopeless, but then a ghost leopard appears. It is Lysandra in a new shapeshifter form now that magic is freed. She helps them fight their way out. Aelin's magic is building, and the demon inside Dorian begins fighting her again. The king shows up and says Kael put up a good fight, but is gone. Kael's death and the flashing ring on his hand bring Dorian fighting out of the demon's hold. He snaps the collar from his neck. Aelin and Dorian fight together against the king. Aelin nears burnout. The two clasp hands and their magic intertwines. They fracture the king's power. When it is drained, they hear him speak in a foreign voice, his own. He says everything he did was to keep Dorian safe from Duke Parrington. When they were young, the two of them opened a crypt in Morath, and Erwin took over the Duke's body. Erwin's minion took the king's body. The king says he sends Dorian's power as soon as he was born, so he built the towers to protect him. He suspects it didn't work on Dorian because his blood was used in the spell. He asks Aelin to kill him for all he's done. He tells them Kael is injured but survived. She is glad she slipped the Eye of Elena in his pocket to protect him when he stayed back to fight the king. Dorian delivers the killing blow. The glass castle shatters at Dorian's battle cry. The bridge they're standing on explodes and they fall. Aelin uses every last bit of power to prevent the glass from pummeling Rifthold. She feels wind, magic from Rowan, come up beneath her and give her a soft landing onto the grass. She passes out, and when she wakes up, Dorian is beside her, and beside him is Kael. Aelin moves to the edge of the castle grounds to tell the assembled people that their king is dead, but the prince lives. She says he is in mourning, but will emerge as their leader soon. She makes threats to keep the city safe from looters until Dorian is ready to rule. Aelin and Dorian and their companions hole up in the castle to rest and recover. Lorcan visits Rowan and says he knows Adian's father is Gavriel, and says that the battle is far from over. When Aelin awakes, she visits Dorian. He is struggling with the things he did while wearing the collar, and the weight of his new responsibilities as king. Aelin says she will be there for him when he needs her. Their kingdoms will be allies. Dorian is beside Kael's bed when he wakes up. He is paralyzed. Dorian thinks he should go to the healers at the South Continent. Dorian names him the King's Hand. Kael and Nesrin talk about making the journey to the healers. Aelin appoints Kael as ambassador for Terrasen to the Southern Continent. She wants him to try to woo them to join with Terrasen and Adarlin while he's there. Aelin, Rowan, Adian, and Lysandra say their goodbyes and leave the castle to begin their journey. After 3 long weeks, they set foot on Terrasen soil, and at long last, Aelin Ashriver Galathinius is home.
Wow, what an ending. That has to be, I think that was my favorite ending of all the books so far.
Far.
Era of Fire had a great ending. I thought it was really good. Crown of Midnight had a really good ending. But this one, I feel like this was like sending us off into what this series is really going to be. You know, like I feel like we like dropped some of the baggage from the first few books. Now we're reading Throne of Glass. Like now we're in Terrasen. We have Aelin Galathinius all the way this time, you know. I mean, I feel like in this book
as
there was
queen.
I mean, you know, she came back to Rifthold with that name, but I feel like there was still a little bit of Selena in there. And not only was there a little bit of Selena in there, but one thing I really like about this book is that, like, so Aelin has this kind of like new cadre, like this new group of people that she really cares about that aren't familiar with the person that she had to become. You know what I mean? Like Rowan doesn't understand really, like. You know, Rowan and Adian both, especially when during the scene, the whole situation with Erebin, which I really want to talk about, they were observing this and just kind of like, whoa,
what the hell?
Wow, really? And it's really interesting because I feel like Selena, that person needed to die in this book in a way that I was so happy to see, because I feel like she didn't really in Era of Fire. She kind of did, but this was the one where Selena really was like, okay, that's done. I'm not that person anymore. I had to be that person for a little while.
Which is nice, because transitions take time.
Dude, honestly, it's like one of my favorite parts of this whole series and why I've kind of like really come around to Selena, Aelin. I think that this has been handled really, really gracefully. I just really like it. I mean, I used to get kind of annoyed when Selena was on the page, and now I just like the way that she is. I like Aelin. Aelin's cool.
I shouldn't really be surprised at this, but I still kind of am, I guess. But man, Sarah J. Maas, once again, like she did last book, so again, I shouldn't be surprised, but she really showed a backbone in her authorship that I didn't quite know that she possessed. And, you know, I should have learned it when we had Sorsha die last book.
Sure.
But, you know, the sheer amount of story that progressed forward, especially in the last like 200 pages of this book, was like incredible to me. We had people dying, all sorts of answers being given. I mean, people, entire kingdoms have been returned to their proper rulers. I really didn't think that that was going to happen until the end, which I'm overjoyed at, frankly, because I was like, man, you even kind of hinted at it this last episode where you're like, man, I kind of hope that the king isn't the big baddie. And they were like,
yeah,
oh, the king's pretty,
yeah,
like, clever. But like, it was kind of nice that he wasn't the big baddie, you know, because there should be a bigger baddie out there. You know, it was nice that we kind of had him as a stand-in. And then, of course, just patting myself on the back all the way home, totally called, like, right at the end, I was like, man, wouldn't it be cool if the king was like, I've been controlled this whole time, and I really actually loved you.
No, you were 100% accurate. That was literally the exact thing that you thought it was going to be.
I know, dude.
That's so, I like, while I was reading it, I was like, oh my God, I'm not going to hear the end of this from Chad.
Yeah, Chad's going to be gloating his...
He's going to be unbearable. No, I was excited about it. I thought it was a really cool development. Honestly, the only issue that I had with it was I wish that we had, because I feel like it happened kind of quickly, you know? Like,
yeah,
it didn't feel anticlimactic or anything, but I felt like it was just like, oh, my son, like, oh, now
if anything,
I'm going to dump
too
this.
Climactic.
Yeah, it was like, oh, I'm going to explain like all of this in like a couple of pages and like, right. Oh, like I'm dead. And it's just like, ah, man, that was a really big deal, actually. It would have been, but I don't know how you could have really stretched it out that much more.
Right.
I just wanted like more bite out of that sandwich, you know?
Totally,
like,
totally.
It was such a cool part of the book. Now, especially like as it relates to Dorian and like Selena being there and stuff. And I thought it was like a really clever way to kind of like shed a little bit more light on Selena's situation with like her parents and her kingdom and stuff, and also like Dorian's situation being magic. Like, it really just like sewed up a lot of different stuff in a really satisfying way. But also, now we're jumping around quite a bit here, but like, also I do think that like Duke Parrington being like the rah-rah guy, I don't know.
Yeah,
man.
That
like,
was a little weird.
I was like, really? That guy?
He's
like,
not
I don't
scary
know.
In my brain. Like, and especially
I can't imagine him at all.
The
like,
name,
yeah,
Duke, like, is like the least scary thing. Like, Duke's are like,
you'd be like Lord Parrington.
Yeah, yeah, it should be. Yeah, there's something, you know, he's just not that scary. Though, when you look at his actions, he's definitely a terrifying person, especially when you look at like what he's doing with the witches, who. Maybe you can help me understand this. I'm kind of confused or surprised that the witches were so quick to get in bed with the evil king or Duke Parrington, because they quit magic, which means that the witches no longer have immortality. And it seems like they should be like moving out of town. Obviously they have immortality returned to them since magic is back in the kingdom. But it was weird that they would ally themselves with the same force that removed their ability to live forever. You'd think that'd be like a pretty big deal to them, you know?
I don't think they were allied with the king out of any kind of loyalty. I think it was just a deal that they had made.
Okay.
You know, I don't think it was like,
yeah, same.
Rah,
I mean, they wanted
like,
wyverns.
Well, and not only that, but I mean, they wanted their land back. It was like the wastes or whatever that is being held currently by somebody. Like, there's like a whole, they're just in it for their own benefit.
They would drop
as soon as they could.
The most benefit would be like being able to live forever. It seemed like, but I mean, I guess they maybe didn't know that old Kingy was super involved with that or something. I don't know. It just seemed like they would have been like fighting against him, you know?
Manon's grandmother is also like, there's like a lot of really sketchy stuff happening with all that.
Super sketchy.
I mean, actually, like, kind of moving over toward Manon, I mean, these chapters for me like weren't quite as exciting as the ones, the Manon chapters in Heir of Fire. The showdown between Aelin and Manon was really, really cool. I liked that a lot. I thought it was super badass, except for, you know, it's funny you were saying like, Masa's such a backbone. She's committing so much to some of this stuff. I kind of agree and I kind of disagree, because like that she's just like, I gotta save her because there's like more books left, you know? It's just like,
totally.
Yeah, sure, go save her because you're so cool. But also, I mean, it makes sense in like its own way. But I think Manon is being set up to be easily, for me, like one of the most compelling characters in the whole series after all is said and done. I really
she's
like
an
her
interesting one.
Yeah, like she's in an awkward spot, you know what I mean?
That's understating it.
I know. But she's like really empathetic for a witch, and I really like seeing that side of her. It's interesting.
A witch who's not supposed to have any emotions.
Well, we talked about that in the last book.
I know. Okay. I'm just poking at it.
I'm like, well, actually, I feel free.
I know, you're right, you're right.
You entertain my theory about it. Sorry, I'm like really pushing my glasses up my nose right now. but yeah, speaking of Menon and all that, what's going on? Do you think there's something going on with Menon and Dorian? Is that like
oh, for sure, dude. Like, yeah. Oh, yeah. She was like, they're eyeing each other. It was the first time that Dorian was able to say his name because he was like so taken with her. Oh, yeah, for sure.
I don't even know because maybe are they they're probably mates because I'm like stuttering right now, but like if Dorian
that like just magic of love like overtook him and he was like I'm Dorian because he's like he was laying it on so thick when they first met. She's like what's your name? He's like whatever you wanted to be. She's like, are you beast or man? He's like, whatever you want me to be. Like,
well, and then also like
classic Dorian.
And then like the part like when Selena like or Aelin like confronts him initially when she rescues Adian. And then like Dorian just comes out and she's like, I know is there still a person in there? And it's just like, like totally not. Yeah. Like he's totally gone. Like he's so evil. And then, but I like that actually. I really like that about this book is that I never really like part of me was like, ah, Dorian's probably fine. But also a pretty good amount of me was like, man, he seems kind of locked away. Like not only does he seem pretty locked away, but also Aelin was like, ready to kill him. And I really love that one line where Kael was like, oh my god, you were gonna kill him, what the hell, you're so crazy. And she's just like, I gave him a whole minute, like you know what that situation was like,
totally
like seconds were the only thing keeping me alive in that moment, and I still gave him a whole minute. Like I thought that was a really awesome rebuttal. I was just like, damn, she's totally right. Like that was
totally
quite speaking of that situation, actually
he was really trying to make sure that he was truly gone before she killed him, you know? And I mean, inside, every time we got privy to what he was thinking, he was like, kill me, kill me.
Sorry, I'm not laughing, but I'm laughing. Speaking of that entire sequence. So when I started reading this book and I figured out like, okay, it looks like the first third of this book is going to be Aelin trying to rescue Adian. And I was kind of on board with it, but I was also like, is this going to be kind of one of those like super easy, barely an inconvenience kind of things where
totally
there's all this buildup and then she just kind of like busts in there. Yeah, and then like just rips him out of there. And it wasn't. I liked it a lot. I mean, it was really interesting. It was really cool. I liked like the dancers like throwing the powder and then smashing the flowers and stuff. And like Adian was just like total dead weight, which I thought was really funny. Just like the image of her like dragging him through there. It was really great. And like the confrontation with Dorian and then Nezrin showing up and just all of that was just really, really compelling.
The only thing that, you know, to tie back to what I was saying earlier was like as soon as him and Adian and Aelin Selena have this like re-meet up, they were like, oh my gosh, like my cousin, like we had so much together time growing up together. And I'm like, when were you guys ever like together?
Yeah,
when
he's
did you
like
build
literally
a
not mo- like mentioned at all. But
ever.
Also, but to be super fair, to be super 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 fair, we don't even know who Selena was until the end of the Crown of Midnight. You know what
that
I mean? So it's like, and Adian was mentioned pretty quickly into Heir of Fire. So
totally.
I feel like it works, but I also see what you're saying though, because I think like we said a couple episodes ago when we were reading like Crown of Midnight, it was weird that Selena knew the entire time that she was Aelin and we the reader didn't.
Right. We so never got to know.
Yeah.
Yet.
So that is she just never, kinda, like, I feel like that's why it's
head.
So jarring. Yeah.
Yeah. We had been in her head for hundreds of pages and it was like, well, you never mentioned like that to yourself even, like that's crazy. But you know, it worked for the story, and as the story expanded, you know, do I think that she started the story right? That maybe, I don't know,
doesn't matter.
I think probably
we're,
not
we're,
but
where
it doesn't
we're
really matter
now, yeah.
Yeah, it's like the only way to really deal like that with something like that is just be like, okay, whatever, and move past it, you know, because does it aid the story? Yes. Does it allow it to expand? Yes. Like all the things that it actually does for the story, I'm on board with. It just seemed a little bit forced the way that it was introduced to me, but like whatever, I'm over it. Well, I mentioned it about it a few more times, probably, but like whatever, I'm over it mostly.
Speaking of Adian and Aelin, did you think it was kind of weird that Adian was so upset that he couldn't like, I don't know, like mind meld with Aelin? Like, I just,
yeah,
I don't know. Like, I mean, I just, I don't see why it's that big of a deal. Like, I just don't,
yeah,
I don't
no.
see why it's like, and it's not
he
like
freaked
that he,
out though.
he was really upset, and like,
yeah,
I just,
very much.
Maybe I just don't know enough about like
that's why
Bay royalty
Aelin
culture,
kicked him out,
but
right for the night.
I think so. He got really too. And like, speaking of like Adian and like, dude, and like Rowan comes back. Like, I was really happy to see Rowan come back.
Me too.
But I feel like we have like two or even like three conversations that were like kind of the same conversation, where it's just like, you better not talk to her like that.
You
better not touch her. Oh, you better not. And it's just like, oh god, dude, like this is so. Like, oh, I'll do anything. I'll fucking kill you. It's just like, jeez, dude. Like, oh my god.
Whoa, dude,
guys just like, this person just came into your life like a few weeks ago.
I didn't even know you existed in each other's life before this, and now you're hyper protective. Like, okay, yeah. Whatever.
Yeah, it's fine. That was just like, because I really like Adian a lot. I think Adian's really interesting.
Do you think Adian and Lysandre?
Yeah, Lysandre.
Yeah. Adian and Lysandre are going to be.
I'm seeing it for sure. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I feel like everybody. Sure. This is kind of like with ACOTAR. Everybody just kind of couples up and
pairing up.
I mean, that's fine. I kind of like it. I mean, it's it just adds a cool depth to everything, and it adds drama to stuff. And
totally,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's like, what else would you do? Like, everybody's just so hot, and everybody's like in like these really stressful situations all the time. It just totally makes sense that
it heightens the stakes, and it gives characters the reasons to do kind of stupid things strategically, because they're like you would do stupid things for your mate, for the person that you were in love with. You know,
no, it makes so many things start making sense. Actually, totally. Like, what's, yeah, I mean, seriously, because. I will really forgive a character for doing really horribly stupid things for people that they love, because it's
totally.
I mean, like, I've never been in like a world stakes situation, but I've definitely like driven across town at 2 a.m. to, like, you know what I mean? Like, I've done some really silly things,
ridiculous things. Yeah.
I'm like really sugarcoating it too here, because I'm talking publicly. But, like, like the things that I've done for love, you know, I haven't pushed any kids out windows.
Nor have I.
Little Song of Ice and Fire Easter egg for you. But anyway, I wanted to. We have a lot of characters and a lot of things to go over here. So another thing that I wanted to talk about, which is a huge part of this book, is Erebin.
Erebin.
Ah, man, I was so stoked that he wasn't in the story anymore. I was sick of Erebin. I was just sick of his stupid face, and I was sick of him lying and gaslighting this. Everybody, it just, oh man, I was so sick of him. And I know,
and Aelin being like, is he bad, or is there any amount of redeemableness inside of him? Like, no, there isn't. He's bad. He's bad to the bone.
Man, I think that, like, dude, seriously, like, Sarah J. Maas's strengths lie so much in her ability to, like, really show somebody being a total piece of shit.
She's so good
at it. Like, she's so, like, the nuance and like the gaslighting and the half truth. No, not half truth, but it's like, it's truth and lie. Like, the way that he explains himself and rationalizes things to her, it's like, it's so greasy,
so manipulative,
it's so slimy and horrible.
In fact, he's one of my favorite characters, like, bad guy.
For that reason,
so much.
No,
but
seriously,
he's very believable.
He's a very well-written character, and he doesn't even have POVs or anything.
I know. And, like, his hold on Aelin, like, he just, like, if you just started the story right here, you'd be like, wow, why is this guy able to, like, manipulate her so well? And it's kind of like, well, because she kind of sees him as this, like, father figure.
Yeah,
and they, like,
but
they
also, like, a lover in a weird way.
Dude, okay.
It's
that was
a
weird thing at the beginning
relationship.
Of this book, where he's, like, breathing on her or something, like the first time they meet, and there's like, she's like, and I couldn't, like, his breath was like on her lips, and it got like really weirdly sexual all of a sudden, and I was like, ooh, gross. What?
No, it's weird groomer stuff, man. Like, no, it's crossing. It's so inappropriate.
So inappropriate.
But like, the way that Maas wrote it out was that Aelin was like, is it inappropriate? You know what I mean? Like, it's so nefarious, and it's just so horrible. Oh my god, it's so horrible. Yeah. Like, so you know, after all of that we just said, I thought it was really appropriate that he was taken out of the story in the way that he was. Mm-hmm. So here's a couple more things though that I want to say. It did feel a little anticlimactic in a weird way. I know, it was like kind of poetic,
so it was like,
almost.
F him, like, he doesn't deserve. And it was like, he just like was a little bit flexing, like, no, you are sleeping with me tonight. And it was like, yeah, but
seriously. And okay, so like that leads me to the other point that I want to make. Lysandre being the one to kill him, I thought was great. Really, really cool. Because the way that Aelin puts it, I'm just paraphrasing here, but that Lysandre had been through even more than Selena had, than Aelin had.
She had been there the whole time.
Exactly. She'd been there the whole time. She never got to leave. She was so much more enmeshed physically. She was enmeshed probably emotionally and mentally even more. So it's really messed up. So yeah. I thought it was just like, it was so cool. It was just like, man, Aelin, you've come so far. Like, for her to put her own vengeance aside for a person that up until now she didn't really have that much respect for.
No.
You know, so like for her to put all
Aelin
of that.
And Lysandra?
Yeah, totally. Like, yeah. So for Aelin to put that vengeance aside, a vengeance, by the way, which we've been hearing about, like we've been thinking about for books and books
we've been
now.
Wanting.
Like, yeah, exactly. So for her to take this other route and recognize the suffering in another person and like kind of give that to her and say, okay, like I'm gonna go ahead and validate everything that you've been feeling, even though our relationship has been strained up until this point. That's just so well done. I really like that so much.
And you can totally see, like, looking back in the history, how perhaps the reason why those two kind of were always at each other's throats was because like father/lover Aerobin was kind of playing them against each other.
Dude,
and had like this weird jealousy
such
thing.
A
like
good
he's
notice.
Just so good at manipulating but everyone around him, and especially the women, it seems like, around him. He's just really good at, like, in a greasy, terrible way, you know?
So I just sung so many praises about this whole sequence. I want to say another thing about this that I just kind of was like, okay. So after Aerobin dies and everything, they're kind of gathered there. And there's this very kind of like high school melodrama play moment,
totally,
you know what I mean? Where it's like, let's bring the will in. And then they like look. They like bring the will in. And then it's just like, oh, the will stipulates that Selena gets everything.
Gets it and, all, every and then, jot and tittle.
And then like a little bit later, they're like, it's just like, oh, Selena, you switched. Ooh, how crafty. You switched the will. That must be where you were all those nights. We didn't know where you were. Like, wow, like schmoozing with the magistrate or whatever.
Right.
Like, wow, what a fan. It was just like, it very much reminded me of the way that Pierce Brown kind of like writes the Red Rising books, where it's like, I'm not going to tell you. I'll hint a little bit at stuff, but like after the fact, it'll kind of like dump and explain everything. You know, and sometimes I like it, sometimes I don't. It just felt very kind of like, oh, all right,
sure,
you know,
sure,
but I did.
Okay, yeah.
So now that I'm going to jump back again and say another thing that I really did like was Selena tricking, like anticipating that Aerobin would put the ring on her finger. And then she like acted
totally.
Her way through that.
And
that
then
was
he acted,
really awesome.
Oh man.
Yeah, that was cool.
That was super cool.
Because for a second I was just like, whoa,
damn
this
it.
Took a crazy turn. Like this went way, like, like way down. I'm like, wow, are we gonna like
to
put
leave,
her in the
though.
Same room with Dorian and they're both just gonna be like plagued by demons together
totally.
And then we'll get, I don't know. That was
dude,
wild.
If there's one thing I have to say that was like, you know, in addition, while we're singing some praises on these books, I really liked the whole demon possession thing. I thought it was done really well, and like you could tell, kind of not tell, when they've got them inside of them, and like the internal struggles that we feel with some of the characters, and how truly some of them would prefer death, you know. And it's
there's
like
a spectrum of it. There's some of them don't and some of them do, and it's like the princes are a little bit stronger and they need the collars
totally.
And stuff, and Moss making it so that there's kind of like this whole ordeal with them, and there's like a hierarchy almost of them instead of just
totally.
Like this one thing, because I feel like this one thing can be like undone really easily, and it's not as scary. It's not
there's principalities within the Valg. I did like how when the clock tower, it was a clock tower, right? Yeah, I think it was a clock tower that was like the tower. When it goes down, it's like, great, magic is back, but it's like also the nest.
Yeah, totally.
And the Zerglings
and also
are free.
Now everybody in Aurelia has like a target on their back almost.
Right.
So I thought that
was
a really cool development too, because it's like they didn't quite save the day. Because towards the end of this book, I was like, okay, well, I was like counting my fingers, like, okay, they killed the king, they got magic back.
Right. I was like, who's
like
left?
Everybody's still alive. So like, what's the rest of the series about? It's like, oh, okay, no. There's actually, so we got like Parrington and Vernon and stuff, and
right,
some
Manion's
of the
grandmother. She's gonna be a huge thing. I think
and
we're gonna
this
get a
big bad demon guy, Erwan,
right,
or whatever his name is.
What was his name?
I don't
something
remember.
Like that. Okay, I really like. I think we're gonna get a lot of the of Manon's kind of. I think this next book's gonna be like Manon struggling with herself and who she is, and what she is, and she's obviously feeling emotions fully now. And like, I don't know. I think that we're gonna get a big kind of her dealing with, because like, man, it's going to be hard to redeem a character like that, and then like enough so that she can fall in love with one of our main goodies. Because like, She'd been eating people until like not very long
ago. That's what I want to see. I want to see that.
Bathing in their blood and like
pretty intense.
Yeah, it's hard to redeem a character like that, especially if it's not like the king, you know, who's like at the very last second, he's like, but I did it for you, you know. I don't think she's really going to have that. She's going to have to just be good. Then it was a little surprising to me that it seems like her 13 like got it faster than she did. They were like, no. Mm-hmm.
I noticed that too. Yeah.
I was like, huh, interesting. But I mean, it was interesting because I didn't expect it.
I think she's in a more compromised position being in the rank, the hierarchy. Yeah.
Okay, that's a great.
She has like more to lose almost.
Totally. Because they're like, dude.
That's the way
like
I look at it.
No, I think you're right. Because they were like pretty upset with her when they start seeing the creatures that the Duke is like helping create with the witches, you know? It's like,
putting
it's
like these
clearly
stones
not
in
good.
Them and they'd already like birthed a bunch of them and stuff. And it's
yeah. Super gross.
Moving over just a little bit. Kale.
Oh, I was just gonna say we need to talk about Kale.
We need to talk about Kale. So I haven't really liked Kale this entire series. I don't not like him, but I do think that his character I feel the most distant from his character. I feel the least interested in his character. He kind of peaked for me in the book previous where, you know, he kind of was dealing with whether or not to go back to his old kingdom and like do what his dad wants him to do. And like, he was kind of fighting with like whether or not he should be on like what side he should be on and stuff. And then that was pretty interesting. And then in this book, I just wasn't really feeling it. Like, I think the thing
it was like for lame reasons that he was just like, I'm not he was internal struggling, but like not in a way that I like really understood very well. Like, dude, why would you I don't know, he just seemed confusing to me.
Discord members, if you are, you know, hard team Kale, like please put me in my place, but I'm gonna talk about him for a little bit real quick, just why he bugs me. So Kale for me in the, at least I feel like he kind of came around, you know, towards the end of this book a little bit when him and Selena had that kind of heart to heart.
Oh yeah,
that was cool. And then he was kind of, you know, I'm not saying he's like the worst character ever or anything. The beginning of this book, it was really rough reading those Kale like discussions, like those conversations
so
that they
weird.
Were having. Dude, he was just like, wow, like I can't believe you were off gallivanting in the place I totally sent you to, and
dude.
Now you're back and you have your own plans.
It's like
you don't have
my notes,
exact
dude.
Plans. Like it's just weird because like Aelin shows up and immediately Kale just jumps down her throat and is just like, everything's all fucked up and I have all these plans, but
and
you have
super
like
abandoned us.
But she didn't. Like, she came
back. I know.
It was so. It was so silly. And I think that. So here's my. This is
more.
My kind of like, I'm gonna really dig into him now. So like
sure.
So the way that I feel about it is that I think that the way Kale is being written in this first part is a scorned lover. I think Kale was expecting Aelin to come back because at the end of Crown of Midnight, she had said, like, it'll always be you or whatever the line was, or I'm going to come back for you, whatever she said. I'll choose you every time. Sorry, everybody.
Right.
I don't know what the line was, but it was something like of that flavor. And
something
then she comes
like
back. And then she comes back. And I think that Kale was mad that she didn't come straight to him and like, please give me the plan. Like, I'm the queen, but also like totally ready to do whatever you want me to. Like, I wasn't buying it. I was just like, man, like, it's so, what bugs me on most, not the most, but another thing that bugs me about Kale is that he threw his sword into the ocean and he made this huge decision. And part of that decision, not the whole decision, but part of that decision is recognizing that Selena is Aelin Galathinius. And it takes him until the end of this book for him to actually land on it, even though it was part of the reason why he abdicated his position. So it's just so frustrating to see him take that long to get there when it's just like, man, like like you just said, you have all the information, like, you know, this is the situation. So dude, she is a queen.
It just seems
and
different than how they left things. But, you know, I was like, wow, really?
It felt like kind of
know.
A character assassination almost.
Totally.
Like, yeah, it felt like Tamlin, but like, we're not going to talk about Tamlin.
Yes.
Sorry,
okay, but it did feel a lot like Tamlin. It was like she just needed someone to like like a lover to feel betrayed and pissed off. And it was like, yeah, but she didn't abandon. He's like, you don't even know what we've been through while you've been gone. And I was like, dude, you sent her away. That was like your idea to like leave. I don't know. It just seemed like very incongruent with not only the story, but what I know about him.
Yeah. No, he was like, do you have any idea how your near death experience when you were getting your soul sucked out by these like demons? Like, well, you were really loud about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just like, dude, what the hell is the matter with you?
Burn everyone in this city too.
Okay, to be fair, it was intense what she was gonna do in Dorinel. But also, you weren't there, Kale.
Right.
Okay. So
it just seemed weird that he wouldn't wait to hear it from her mouth, you know?
I would really love to hear some pro-Kale propaganda in the Discord, everybody.
Yeah.
Like, please,
yeah.
I wanna see it. I feel like I've built such a good case. Well, not right now, actually. Towards the end of this book, I feel like
kinda. I still got some making up to do in my mind.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. I don't know. Yeah, Kale.
I thought he was gonna die, and I was kind of stoked for it because he could have fully redeemed himself in my mind if he would have gone down fighting for the side of the good here.
I would
have
been like, All right, man. He's nice. Definitely he's injured. I think he's paralyzed, right?
Yeah, he's paralyzed. Dorian tries to heal him.
Waist down.
Waist down. Uh-huh. Okay. Totally. He was fully, but then Dorian like healed him. But he could only do it up until like his waist down. Yeah.
I mean, I feel like
which
Kale,
I liked.
We could me too.
The thing that I really like about Kale is the brotherly bromance that he has with Dorian, which is just adorable in every way.
That was the thing that actually kind of pushed Dorian over the edge too, was when Dorian thought that his dad had killed Kale, which I thought was great. That was
me
that was
too,
really cool.
Because it was like friendship over love. I kind of like that. Mm-hmm. Like it seems like Moss is all about the love, you know. And so it's like sometimes like, I don't know, just the friendship was really nice to have that be the thing that allowed Dorian to survive and kind of get through it all mentally, you know?
Another thing I want to shout out here real quick. So I've been talking to a couple of people who I'm friends with who have read this whole series, and we have a text thread. And so I've been kind of like clarifying some stuff with them. Their names are Maggie Siciliano and Amber Nicole. Amber is an author of some very, very popular books, one of them being called The Book of Asriel. And Maggie is a great content creator who's also working on some books. But anyway, we were talking about this and I messaged them and I was like, rah, 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 like she just had to show Rowan the piano, you know what I mean? the music and everything. And I was kind of like, you know, it was kind of a send up. And then Maggie was like, wow, you really have a problem with her being good at piano. So like I sat and like thought about it for a little bit. And I was like, actually, it really makes a lot of sense that she would have this other facet to her. And then I started like really thinking about it more. I like took a second and I was like, Evan, what's up with this? So like I thought about it even more. And I was like, actually, the whole music aspect of all of this is really cool in the sense that it adds a dimension to this whole story where, and this is shown in the conversation that Aelin has with the kind of, I can't remember her name, but the like dance instructor lady, like right before they all go into the party or whatever. She has this conversation where she's like when you're queen or whatever, make sure that music is still like a really big part of the society. It's so important to the society. Like the arts in general are so important. And I think it really adds like a whole layer of depth. Why are we doing any of this? What's the point of all this? Why are we slitting so many throats? Totally. Why are we working so hard?
Why are we slitting so many throats?
A lot of throats are slit.
A lot of throats.
But why? What's the point of all this? And I'm not saying that art is the point of all this, but humanity is the point of all this.
Self-expression. Freedom.
Yeah, like freedom. You know, I mean, like the idea that we have an art community, we have things that we're passionate about. Like Selena being really good at the piano is a thing that she's passionate about apart from the struggle that she's had her entire life. And I think that's been like one of the biggest learning curves for me reading this series. Even just admitting it is like kind of uncomfortable because I feel like I was very hostile to the idea that Selena had this other side to her. I feel like I almost had like pegged her as like she has to be this certain way if she's going to be this murderous person.
Sure,
but
yeah, totally.
Why?
Totally.
Like, why? That doesn't make any
sense.
Right,
it makes sense like, actually that she would have this
totally
this avenue of release that she would be able, because she wasn't able to like live her truth or however you want to say it before when she was with Erebin. So it's like kind of makes sense that she would have this like extremely emotional like area, this output that she would have. I just wish, what I wish is that we would have seen her practicing. What I don't like in stories is when all of a sudden somebody is like a grandmaster at something and you're like, what? I've been with you for hundreds of pages and I've never once seen you like play, you know.
She does in the first book.
Yeah, it's in the first book. But I mean, like, still, we had like this whole her backstory.
But we were wrong. My point is though is that I feel like, at least I feel like I was wrong to put her in that box.
A corner, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like demand that she be in that box. So
like assassins,
I just want to like
feelings.
Say that. Yeah. No, I just want to like say that. Like I was wrong about that. It was not a very good criticism on my part. Even if that conversation hadn't happened, I still would say I was wrong about that. But the conversation that she has with that dance instructor is that really solidified. When I thought back on that, I was like, oh, that's probably why that makes a lot of sense. Okay, so
totally.
I just wanted to like segue into that for a little bit because it's important.
To give your point even a little bit more juice, I actually really like where you're coming from because it does like, again, I have a little bit of problem with like never hearing of the practice or anything, but like whatever, that's a minor detail. She would have totally had enough time that I have not heard about in her growing up to learn the piano. But your point is even backed up a little bit by what's the like few other times we've seen people like actually express themselves via music. Well, it was during that
they got their heads cut off. Yeah,
yeah, they got their heads cut off.
Totally.
So it was like,
yeah,
very much like a this is on the good, this is on the bad, and it was just like nice to have that side of it, you know, and it makes sense that she would have that sort of output because she can't be talking about what she's feeling inside, but she can play it out, you know.
Dude, I'm a musician
more
too.
Subtle.
Like I should have connected on that. I don't know why I didn't. I feel silly, you know. But hey,
no,
that's what reading's
fine.
For, man. It's about thinking about stuff. Like
totally.
I'm wrong sometimes about how I interpret stuff and how I feel about stuff. So I'm glad that we had this much time and this many conversations. And thank you, Maggie and Amber, for tolerating me not liking a girl for playing
bad
the piano.
People can't
I'm
play
sorry.
Music.
Jeez.
When else do we recently have someone who is bad playing music in a story?
Bad at playing music?
Yes. No. Someone who was like an evil character and they were like really good at playing an instrument. That's happened recently.
That was in Red Rising.
Was it?
Well, it wasn't a bad character, but I don't want to spoil anything, but there was a kind of bad character.
Okay.
Could,
yeah, and I remember remarking like how it was interesting. Yeah. Oh yeah. No. And
so
I was like, I thought
it
was kind of cool. I know exactly remember now who it was. And I remember thinking it was kind of cool that like, of course, bad people or sometimes some semi-bad characters can like have different parts of them that like aren't all bad.
No, that was
know?
Me. That was me shoving Selena into the box that I had drawn for her when there was an author that had different ideas. So
way to be a big man, Evan. You're really growing as a person.
I felt pretty small when I thought about it. It's like, geez, Evan. Okay, moving on just a little bit to Dorian. I was kind of bummed out about Dorian. Like I think I said in the last episode. I don't know. In the last episode, I said I didn't want him to be trapped for
this whole book,
and he was. And it was.
He was.
I think that. Okay, so a couple thoughts on this. Moss needed to have him collared for what the plot was, so that's fine.
He
I'm
had
not
to be neutered.
Saying it's bad. And to her credit, those chapters were like kind of interesting in their own way because it was like, is he totally locked away or is this demon going to win or whatever? It's just, he was a character that I really enjoyed for books previous. And then I just really feel like he just wasn't here for the whole book.
Right,
no.
So
just,
he was like literally not here.
Yeah,
like,
he's not
taken
there.
Over.
And then, so for me personally, like it made the end just feel very like quick. And it's just like, like Dorian just like does this
he's
really
back.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And then it's just like over. And there was like some conversation, you know, when everything kind of died down at the very end. But I don't know. It's just not a Dorian book, I guess.
No.
You know? So
no,
that's fine.
It would have been, I don't know how he would have been able to be like woven
no
into
way.
The story
There's
in like
no
a helpful
way.
Way or anything, you know. In fact, yeah, I think it was good, but I totally understand your frustration. And like, I really like the Dorian character in past books, and you know, he's just like the best dude, hands down, of any dude that we've spent a lot of time with the exception of like Rowan, maybe. But I mean, Dorian is just so sweet the whole time. He's like he's just super sweet. So yeah, I just liked. I don't know. I liked that he was. That a character of such goodness in him was able to be perverted in that way, and then it was able to kind of like battle his way back, you know? Because at one point he was just like, "Kill me."
Did Aelin and Dorian do the Caranom thing? Was that Did they like joined magic forces?
So I don't really know. Okay,
he didn't say the word, so I was like, is that what's going on right now? Can they just do that without the Caramon thing? Or
I have no idea, because they started to like glow gold together and like.
Is that we're just supposed to assume that? I don't know.
I don't know. And I thought that was maybe something you could only do with your mate. I don't know. If there's anything that I have like a major like eye roll towards is the consistency of magic in these books. How
no,
it's
no.
Used.
Remember, I'm gonna.
Please stop me before I'm about to say something dumb.
No, you're not gonna say something. We agreed in the last episode. Oh, it's all vibes. So we're just gonna.
It's all vibes. That's
I just wanted to stop you in your tracks before we go down this really boring road that our fans are like don't want to hear.
Okay, just like 30 seconds though. 30.
How about like 12 seconds?
Okay, like 12 seconds. Magic is gone, but it's super not gone, and there's like many different ways, and it's all the same, but it's all not, and it's totally different, but it's all fine. Vibes done.
Lysandra can shapeshift. There's an explanation in there somewhere. It's about something. She can shapeshift. It's awesome.
Magics can
Don't
still
worry
happen
about
when
it.
It's not happening. Yeah, it's fine.
It's vibes. So totally. let's just move on.
It must have felt so great to have it come back, though. Like, if you were, like, dead to that the whole
time. I don't know, man. Because, like, in the last book, wasn't that, like, a point of contention? Weren't they, like, should we even do this? Because wouldn't it, like, be way too much for everybody? I felt like Moss just kind of, like, tossed that in the garbage. She's like, it'll be fine. It'll be totally fine. Like, because it was such an obvious, like, this needs to happen for this.
Especially with like Kale being kind of like a little meanie about it. You know, he was just like, I don't even know if we should have magic come back because like, could we even, I don't know. It just seemed a little like contrived by him. He's like, how would we even control your kind? It was like, whoa, your kind, Kale? Like, okay, well, calm down there, big guy.
Okay, another little maybe, I guess kind of a nitpick. Okay, there's a couple things. I'm gonna like run back over to Kale real quick because man, this guy just bugged me. Kale apparently had told Aelin that he has a quote like no woman policy with regard to the castle guard. Yeah. But then Nezrin shows up and she's part of the castle guard. So
what was that all about? Head of the castle guard at the end?
She does. Yeah. But I mean, it's like, it's not Dorian's policy. So, you know.
Right.
I just thought it was weird. It's just, so I don't know. Somebody could answer that. Like, it's such a nitpick. Doesn't really matter. But then also, while we're on the subject of Nezrin, okay. I liked Nezrin a decent amount. I'd be happy to see more of her. But,
yeah.
Like we were talking about in the very beginning of the episode, she felt kind of tossed in. Like, she felt this is one of Kale's old flames to just like rattle everybody's cage here. Like, I don't know. So that's fine though. I don't mind the added drama. I think Nezrin is pretty cool. She's pretty badass. I want to see more of her. But I thought it was hilarious. So funny that Kale is like sweating. He's just like, oh my god, this is so awkward. I've totally hooked up with both these girls. I don't know. This is gonna be so awkward. And then they both get there, they see each other, and neither of them care at all about this.
He's almost like, oh wow, okay, well I guess they're really over me. Okay, cool.
and the reason that this got me so good, y'all, the reason this got me so good is because, and I'm being very transparent, I'm maybe oversharing with everybody, but that has happened to me. I was playing a show here in Portland, and three people showed up that I had physical relations with. They were all at the show, and I
played the drums for.
I was like, this is such a nightmare. And I let it get to me so much. Oh my God. It was so silly. And like, none of them cared. Like, it was not a big deal. I was being such a baby about it. And I was like, I was being so dramatic. And I think that Kale was, I just thought it was interesting because like right when I read it, I was like, I know you're so ridiculous, Kale, because I've been that ridiculous. But I just thought it was really funny that Aelin and Nezrin were just like, oh, hey, yeah.
Whatever.
Hey, some people sleep with each other. Yeah, I don't know. It's like, it's not really that weird, actually, that
totally
that you'd have a history with somebody. What I also really liked, and this is going to segue nicely into another thing I feel like we should talk about, there didn't seem to be a ton of jealousy, really, between like Kale and Rowan. I felt, you know what I mean?
Which was nice.
Like, yeah, Kale was just like I hope you're happy with Rowan. And you seem to really mean
it. There definitely was a little bit of jealousy for sure.
But it wasn't like a huge. You're right. But I just mean it wasn't the book. You know what I mean? It wasn't totally. That's just what I mean. But I should have rephrased that.
There was a natural amount of it, because like you would be a little upset if like your girl that you left and she was like yours all of a sudden shows up with this like hot fey dude that she's been like training
tattooed.
Under. And you're just like, man, yeah, you know. So like, I get it.
What I meant though is that it wasn't the whole story of this book was chaos, jealousy, or like, that's
yeah,
what
that
I meant.
Tiring, like immediately.
I do want to talk about Rowan and Aelin though. And I think that me saying this is probably going to, I might lose some of you here. I don't see it, man. I don't see it. Like, what do you think?
There's never been a point that I didn't think that they were super all into each other when they had like a book and a half of like friendships. Like, I didn't even really ever think that they were just friends. There was always this like tension in my mind.
No,
maybe
I,
that
I
was fake
was, like,
and
mostly...
I was just in putting it in there. Because we talked about this
like
at the end of last
like
episode, too.
More like a brother-sister kind of thing. Like, I thought it was
That's what you said, and I was like, man, I thought they were, like, always. It was clear to me that they were mates, like, always. But, like, and they still might not be. I don't know, but I'm pretty certain
that
they are.
No, they are. Like, and it's laid on so thick, though, like Lyria. Like, it's just, like, it ruined this guy. And, like, maybe that's the whole point of it is, like, you got to move on or whatever. But, like, I just feel like it was being laid on so thick that this was kind of a platonic... almost sibling type situation, but it's fine. I mean, I'm not upset about it or anything. I'm just like still even like not super seeing it, you know?
Yeah, there needs to be a time where they can like be romantic with each other and like kind of get, they need to date a little. They need to go on some dates, you know?
Like Feyre and Rhysand, I was like, totally. Like
totally.
Yes, like this totally yes. makes sense. Like they've had,
yep.
they've had.
It
so
even
much...
started off not making sense. That's why it was slow.
Sure.
It was earned. It
but
was.
But that's
earned.
Kind of like what was happening with Rowan and Selena. You know, back when they were training, and Rowan was like being super. He was like Kael 2.0. You know what I mean?
Totally.
But like that's because he was kind of like Kael 2.0 almost. I was like,
yeah.
And I know that some people that love this series are probably in their car right now, like screaming at their radio. Cause like, I'm sorry. Like, this is just, I'm being really honest. Like, I just don't quite see it yet. Maybe I'll have my mind changed in the next book. But it's just, I don't know, man.
The thing that I thought, like, Adian's, his protectiveness was almost a little creepy. It was like, remember, she's your cousin there, big guy. Like, it kept, like, I don't know. He seemed almost jealous.
there were
a
couple of moments where I was like, are they cousins?
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I was like, are they really cousins, though? Because he's, like, really, yeah. like upset that she's wearing, like, Sam's shirt or whatever, you know? I was like...
Well, Adian is... What I'm curious... So, Adian is Rowan's brother? I know. You, like, didn't even notice that, did you? Like,
no, I didn't. They're brothers?
So...
Then how are Rowan?
I know. Okay. Like,
and what?
Dude, it's so funny. Like the fan art for some of this. It's just like, that's not how I picture these people. These are babies in my mind. Because I'm like
totally.
In my 30s. So these are like 17 and 18 year olds.
Children,
and then when you like,
yes.
And then when you like look at the fan art, it's just like this is like a 28 year old like, supermodel
dude. Yeah.
It's like that's not what an 18 year old looks like. Whatever.
No.
But I mean, it's fine. Doesn't matter at all. But some of the dudes, some fan art came out recently, or at least it's being spread around. Of Menon writing Abraxas, and it's such an awesome painting. Oh my god, it looks so
really?
Cool. It's like exactly what I would picture like a witch riding a dragon to look like. Except I did picture Abraxas to be a little bit just like scrawnier. Like they painted Abraxas to be like he's pretty beefy, you know. This is in my mind Abraxas
super
is like
beefy. I'm looking at with their arms out.
Yeah, yeah. It's a really cool
painting.
Yeah,
it's like cool.
Like,
and like the spire silk wings are done really
like,
well.
It looks so cool. But
it looks
like
so
the,
cool.
Like all the color just oh my god, it's such an awesome picture. But also Abraxas
totally
he's just
is.
He's too big.
Yeah, no, he's way skinnier in my mind too.
Yeah, he's like
and she's
frail.
Way too happy. Like she's never grinned this much in her life, you know.
Menon
has
never
he...
been that happy.
But
or
this
maybe,
is really cool.
But see, because there's like a part where maybe the inspiration was from when I think it was Astarin or Sorrel or something. Anyway, we're way off topic. But
I love this size of dragon for people to ride though, because sometimes when they get too big, it seems a little silly. Like. Riding this huge thing, you're like you could have like a tower on top of that dragon, you know?
Okay, so I looked this up because I have to know. And it's on Goodreads. Somebody said, all right, wait, I thought Rowan and Selena were cousins. Did I miss something? And then all the comments, seriously, all these Team Rowan people are creeping me out. They are related. And he is old as hell.
They
said, maybe I'm biased since I'm Team Kale. Well, I don't trust your opinion at all then. Never mind.
No, fuck that.
He's like 1,000 years old, so no, they're barely related. Oh, that's a pretty good point, actually.
Oh, because so many generations has gone past. Okay, so...
Because I know that... I can't remember exactly why, but I think Adian is Rowan's... I think he's his half-brother. I'm not sure. It could be his full brother. I'm not really sure. I wasn't paying that much attention. But yeah, so Aelin and... There's like a technicality there. So Aelin and Rowan are related, but not really.
But there's hundreds of generations between...
Well, there's like...
Is that...
I don't know how old... I think he's like 1,000 years old or something.
Yeah, something like that. Actually, I mean, his wife died 200 years ago.
Yeah, I can't remember if he's like 300 or 1,000, something like that.
Yeah, me neither.
We're way off topic.
Okay, so when Elena kisses Rowan for the first time, it says he like pulls back and he's like, that answers a question that I've had for centuries.
Yeah.
What do you think that question was? Is like whether or not his first wife was his mate for real, for reals?
Or if you could have two mates.
Oh, you know,
I feel like that
mates.
Would be the question. Yeah,
that's,
I mean,
yeah,
I don't
better,
think he would doubt
better.
That Lyria was his mate. I think the question would be, can I have another one eventually? So,
right. Oh, that's a way better question, of course.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, it's kind of lame that we have to like kind of like crap on his first love in order to make this new one happen. But we don't have to. There could be two mates. That's a way better response. I like that a lot more than what my brain did.
Man, if you really want to risk the spoilers, going into the Goodreads forums about these books is pretty funny.
Is it really?
Yeah, people are heated up in here. Makes sense, though. I mean, there's a lot to talk about. I mean, like, you and me have been able to effortlessly have this long of a conversation about this.
True.
I mean, this book was really long. Like, this book was,
really
super
long.
And actually, that kind of leads me into another thing I wanted to talk about is, like, I did feel like there were some pretty boring parts of this book.
Man.
There
was some pretty boring parts of this book. There's a lot of parts where people are just talking, just vibing, and just talking and vibing, and talking and vibing, talking and vibing.
And that's cool. I mean, I don't mind the vibing, man. Like, I mean, I really don't. I think, and it's a lot like with ACOTAR, where like, there were just the kind of these moments of like the camaraderie where they were all like having dinner, or they were all like even Court of Frost and Starlight is. I mean, it's a pretty important book at the end, but like, you know, they're just hanging out, and I don't mind. I don't really mind the hanging out as much. I just feel like, some like chapters and like conversations just feel like they could be kind of like combined and like maybe just like more efficiently.
I feel like sometimes when there's not action happening in these books, sometimes Moss will create, she'd be like, well, it's been our waters have been like, it's been smooth sailing for too many pages, and so I'm gonna have two characters who are friends get really mad at each other for like something they could resolve pretty easy if they were just both had like a real authentic conversation with each other for a few minutes. But we're gonna have them have this like kind of weird misunderstanding where emotions will get between. But I mean, I guess it's fairly similar to what happens in real life fairly often, right? As two people
like, how many
not
ridiculous
the time to
conversations have you had?
Where people are coming from and then assume the worst of other people and they don't take the time to really really learn the what's going on in the other person's brain, or maybe the other person's not very good at expressing it. And it could. Ends in these emotionally charged situations, but I do sometimes feel like they're a little bit forced when it's like, okay, we haven't had a fight in a while, so we're gonna have these two characters fight and one's gonna get really mad at the other one for like kind of good reasons, even though if they just would like kind of cool off and have a conversation, it would be like totally fine. But you know, so I don't know, sometimes I feel like, oh, we're mad again. Okay, I thought it was really cute how we got a little bit of we got a little Sam call out where she's wearing like Sam's shirts, you know, because like every girl when she I don't know, I always find it really like lovely whenever I'm with a partner and they end up taking my clothes. It's just kind of a nice like cool thing to like see your girl in a hoodie or like your t-shirt or something. It's just like, oh, you know, it's like nice. And we get her kind of doing that when she puts on Sam's clothes and she's like wearing this big shirt of his, and it was just like, oh, you know. Kind of like how she throws in like an ACOTAR, we get like texting in like this magical way, you know, and it was just kind of a cool little like comparison that she does to the world that we live in that I'm like, oh, that's cute. That I always like that too.
Speaking of texting, are Aelin and Rowan could just like read each other's minds? Like,
I guess so.
Whatever.
They're just in there. Just mind texting, maybe because of their mates. Maybe it's a mate thing.
That's cool. I mean, maybe it's foreshadowing that she's a mate. Did you feel like Rowan's character was a little bit different in this book than it was in Air of Fire?
Yeah.
Do you think it was the blood oath thing? Because he was like really standoffish in Air of Fire.
Yeah, I feel like he's so cold.
It's like a very different. I'm not saying I don't like it. I mean, I think it's cool that Rowan has the range that he does, honestly. So I'm not even saying he's an extremist.
He does nothing halfway, you know?
Maybe. I like that take a lot, actually. She's like, all right, I'm going to love you. You're not even going to believe how much I'm going to love you. It's going to be wild.
He's like, I don't like you. You don't even going to believe how much I'm going to be a kind of dirt wad to you. And then he's like, actually, I love you now, and I'm going to love your ass off. You know, as we start wrapping up, I just want to give a shout out to Sarah J. Maas of like her stories aren't really one-sided. This is not just a love story. It's not just an action story. It's not just a story of a girl getting her kingdom back. It's like, man, she really is able to create a fairly complicated story without making it seem too forced in ways. Like, you're not like, oh, that's a love story with like this whole like kingdom thing jammed in there. It's like, no, all her pieces fit together really well. Sometimes I question the like order and me not hearing about some of those pieces beforehand, or me being like warmed up to those pieces, let's call it. But by and large, it's pretty amazing the like diversity of conversations that you and I are able to have on her story. What do you think? There's like, I get a lot of the futures of the characters, or what I think they're going to be going. What do you kind of think Kale's deal is as far as the story is going to go? Like, he was the one that I was like, what's he doing? He's just kind of like gets risen as to like the king's hand, which I wasn't even sure was like a position before this. You know, which is again like another Game of Thrones. Yeah. Also, there's a line that she says like, he has become something, destroyer of words, and I was like, all right, are we getting a little quote from old who's the guy who made nukes? Oppenheimer. Thank you. Yeah.
So my feeling on Kale, I've given so lost, many kinda. Feelings on Kale. I mean, yeah, sure. I feel like his prowess as a fighter has been mentioned. We've seen a little bit of it, but it's like, he's not like the greatest fighter in the world. It's not like his whole personality. No. If anything, honestly, I feel like Kale is a much more tactical, much more cerebral person. So I feel like having he's still like such an asset. So I feel like him being by Dorian's side as an advisor in that capacity, I'd be really interested to see kind of like how his mind takes to it in the books coming after this. It'd be pretty cool. Yeah, I think Kale, we might get some pretty awesome scenes and some pretty cool decisions and like conversations with Kale moving forward now that he's in this different position. Now that he doesn't have, you know, he's kind of like for lack of a better phrase, like let Selena go. I don't know what's going on with him and Nezrin. Maybe they'll hook up, or maybe they'll.
I guess so. I just wasn't really feeling that character. Really given like an obvious love thing, but maybe he kind of was I kind of forgot about Nezrin.
Yeah, I mean, she was kind of tossed in, even though she was pretty cool. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, like prediction wise, though, I'm kind of.
What do you think?
I'm kind of coming up a little short. I mean, I feel like a lot of stuff is pretty buttoned up in this book, but like obviously. No, we didn't. I mean, like,
I know,
you know, Parrington is still a thing. Bjorn is still a thing. The witches are not on, like, just because the king's dead, like, they're going to side with whoever's going to give them their land back and stuff. So that's like a whole, I mean, there's still a lot. And there's still like the big bad, like, you know, rah, 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 demon guy that's really
like
bad.
Satan himself.
I think that a lot of the next book will probably, I mean, it's called Empire of Storms. I think that maybe this next book, I mean, there's a tandem read that Chad and I have decided not to do, by the way, everybody. It's too much. It's too much of an undertaking. It's like 1300 pages. It's just, so we're going to read Empire of Storms.
Shudder at the
thought
of writing that recap.
Yeah. And then Kingdom of Ash is almost 1,000 pages long. So we still have so I think we're going to do Empire of Storms in one episode and Tower of Dawn in one episode. They might be pretty lengthy episodes, but then Kingdom of Ash, we're doing in two episodes. We just have to. It's 1,000 pages long.
Yeah, 1,000 pages long,
and it's the last one, so we'll do the do the Twilight treatment on that.
And it'll be fun to do like some predictions halfway through that book.
Yeah,
check
totally.
In with each
that'll,
other.
It'll
you be, know,
cool. Be cool. And I like this series too. I mean, like, I'm fine with doing four more instead of three more. So
very intrigued as to where it's going to go. Like, obviously,
yeah,
we have some things. But man, I got to say, I'm really, really, really stoked with the, again, the backbone that Sarah showed in the story. I did not think that we were going to progress this far through it. Because I kind
of
thought she was
a
like...
a lot of stuff happened. Yeah.
I thought she was going to be kind of more of... I shouldn't say backbone in this one. I thought she was going to be a lazier author, where she was going to really milk these problems for a lot longer in dealing with the king. And
But she buttoned him up and moved along.
Yeah. And I have a lot of respect for that.
Yeah, I was really happy
to
see that.
As an author, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's a kind of commitment where it's like, okay, like, I can't, I mean, milking is kind of like a strong word for it, but I would say there's a certain, like, maybe comfort zone that Moss was probably writing in. You know, like, Rifthold is very fleshed out. You know, like, we've got all these players could still be in this city and take care of a lot of issues from where they're at.
Right, right.
But also, though, I'm very happy to see Selena Aelin move into her position out of her comfort zone back to the lands she came from, so another comfort zone, but not in that same way. So there's a lot of stuff still to figure out. So I think that the next book is probably going to be a lot of her adjusting, getting used to all of this, like coming to terms with
in the shadows.
Yeah, like she's got to come to terms with like what her actual position is and the power that she has, and a kingdom that is still reeling from being taken over and colonized. And this, it's you know, she's gonna have to like put these pieces back together, so to speak. And I don't even know if
earn
she's
the
like
trust of her people.
Yeah, there's like a certain diplomacy, and you know, she's a head of state now. I mean, there's like a lot of different things. She was an assassin for most of her life. She's still pretty young and fairly inexperienced when it comes to the kind of stuff.
Young
so,
and naive.
Like, yeah, I mean, like, she's going to need advisors. She's going to, I mean, we're probably going to meet a whole different cast of people that are already kind of like a setup system here in Terrasen.
Totally.
That might not even be welcoming her with as open arms as she was expecting. Like,
power players don't like the structure to be shaken.
Geopolitics is weird, you know, and I feel like now that we've expanded the way that we have and the landscape has changed in the way it has, geopolitics is the nature of countries changing and borders changing and regimes changing and stuff like that. So I think Moss has her work cut out for her, like, moving forward. You know, I'm interested to see like what she's trying to say and like what this means. And you know, are we replacing a bad dictator with another bad dictator? Like, does Aelin know enough about the role that she's been given and enough about herself to rule? Like, I've kind of seen it. Like,
and she's definitely got some trust problems. Is that going to hurt her moving forward, or is that going to aid her? You know,
well, and you need people that you trust and people that that know what they're doing too when you're doing this kind
of
stuff.
That's exactly what I'm saying. She could end up like not trusting someone she should trust that's really actually there to help her, you know. And I really got to say, and maybe this is me coming off of Pierce Brown a little bit too hard, but I really hope that she just like totally bombs her first public speaking experience. You know, like, I'm just kind of tired of characters being like so good at it, because it's like a skill I hold in high esteem and one that I've spent a lot of my life getting good at and consider myself to be pretty good at it. And man, just to see characters just like whipping out speeches that can rouse, you know, hundreds of thousands of troops like on a dime, like improvising that. It's like, man, there's 1 in 1,000 people who can pull that off. And, so yeah, I would love to see her just like botch it and her to be like, man, ruling is like harder than I thought it was going to be. I have some things to learn. And that would just be like really cool to see a growth phase around some of those like maybe not so much talked about facets of ruling, you know?
I don't know. I kind of disagree.
I don't think I'm going to get it.
I'd be pretty stoked to see a really epic speech from Aelin actually, like on her return.
Me too, after she gets good at it.
Yeah. Okay, sure. Baby.
You know how nerve-wracking it could be? You know, remember first time you played music, you're like, man, I don't want to mess this up. But
No, not really.
I'm not going to be red.
Probably not. I don't know.
No, dude, she's going to give a rousing speech.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we could talk about this for hours, but I feel like we covered a lot.
I think we covered a lot, too. I kind of want to go read the next one, honestly.
Yeah, I got it right here on my desk. It's a really cool purple. I've been buying the newer covers. I think they look cooler. I remember when they first came out and everybody on TikTok was like, I hate these covers. And I was like,
I
think they look pretty cool, actually. Like,
they're pretty cool, too.
I don't like the old like Evanescence covers, you know.
The Evanescence covers.
I don't know. I just don't like
making out in the rain and stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, they're fine. Okay.
Oh, that's funny.
I think we're done talking about this book. Is there anything else you wanted to go over? I think we're good.
No, I just said, like I said, I shouldn't have it in my brain at this point. Sarah J. Maas should have all of my trust, but she continues to surprise me in really good ways, and that she has both spine as an author and she's not lazy. And man, I'm here for it.
Yeah, I mean, to sum up, I mean, I'm really excited for the direction that this series seems to be going in. I'm excited for some kind of like
large scale warfare.
Let's get some battles in here. Yeah, I mean, let's get some cool battles, some wyvern battles and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I these books are getting pretty long. So
they are really. Hey, can these wyverns breathe fire?
I don't know.
I mean, I don't either. There's I can't some... like think of a time. That might have been just a terrible question.
At some point? Are they just giant lizards?
I don't remember.
Scary lizards. Okay, that's got to be it for us. It has to be it for us.
It has to be it for us. Yeah, we gotta run on. We gotta run on.
Okay, everybody, thank you so much for listening to this episode. I love talking about these books. They're really fun to talk about.
Me too.
Especially with you, Chad. And everybody, if Chad and I missed something, or you think we're wrong about something, or you think we're right about something, hit us up in the Discord. We do have a Throne of Glass channel in the Discord. And we love hearing
from you.
You want
to hop in there and tell me how right I was on my prediction about the king?
Oh, I can't get enough
I will
of
love
that.
It.
But until the next episode, everybody, thank you so much for listening. Hope you have an amazing rest of your day. And of course, happy reading.
Bye, everybody.